listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Naya Reyes, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, how university communities are dealing with actions from the Trump administration, a recap of ANO's spring speaker event, and the Todoroki sushi eating contest. These stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. With the Trump administration escalating its attacks on universities, many professors and students are increasingly discussing the boundaries of free expression. Rosemary Mbao has the story.
With the Trump administration escalating its attacks on universities, many professors and students are increasingly discussing the boundaries of free expression. Representatives from the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, better known as FIRE, visited Northwestern on Thursday night, asking some of these questions. What does free speech really mean, and how prevalent is it on college campuses? FIRE invited students and faculty to discuss one of the country's fundamental freedoms, the First Amendment, which promises freedom of speech. However, the discussion at Northwestern quickly revealed that this freedom, while clear in theory, can become blurry in practice.
Ultimately, it's not just about making sure that policies don't infringe on free speech. It's about making sure that people understand why civil discourse is the correct approach.
That's Ryan Anslone, a senior program counsel working on FIRE's policy reform team. He explained that the First Amendment protects individuals from government censorship and that any restriction must meet a high bar to be considered constitutional. FIRE's mission is to defend individual rights, especially in academic settings. Thursday's session wasn't a lecture, but a conversation. Some students were invited to share, question, and push back. One moment stood out for many in the room. McCormick Jr. Caleb Nunes is one of them.
How whenever the moderator, proctor, I guess, of this session asked us, like, how often do they feel like free speech principles are kind of consistently applied by students, no one raised their hand. And so I think that a really apparent problem at Northwestern is that students really enjoy when their free speech rights are protected as it relates to whatever issue they're most passionate about. But whenever it comes to issues in which they might disagree or might not be as passionate about, they're less willing to kind of come forward and defend those views.
FIRE argues that inconsistency erodes a culture of free speech. The First Amendment only works if it protects all speech equally, especially the unpopular kind. FIRE gave Northwestern's policies on speech a yellow light, since it says some of these policies are too vaguely written that they restrict legally protected speech. The event also provided a deeper understanding of the protections and limitations of the First Amendment.
I think it's kind of just like a call for like awareness of how like speech policies, speech codes impact us all in really identical ways. It just, you know, you might not be on the receiving end of like speech restrictions, but someday you might. And so because of that, you should try to apply equally your sort of standards as it comes to protected speech.
Other students focused on the opportunity for conversations that were difficult, but also calm and respectful.
I think free speech and civil discourse are really important in building civic community, which is something I think we currently lack on campus. And it was really good to see people working to come together across the aisle and have constructive dialogue.
That was Noah Corris, a social policy major. Mutual respect wasn't just theoretical. According to Corris, it was clear in the room.
Happy to see how respectful everyone was towards each other, even though we disagreed with each other sometimes and there were a lot of different viewpoints represented in the room. We were all able to come together and have a civil conversation, and that's what's really important.
That spirit of dialogue is central to FIRE's mission, but students say they don't always experience it on campus. Siddharth Sivaraman came to the event with some background knowledge of free expression, but hearing directly from FIRE, he says, gave him a new perspective.
I think it's been really interesting from my perspective. I mean, I've taken a couple classes, on individual civil liberties, like in high school and stuff like that. So I'm a little bit familiar on the First Amendment, but it's been interesting to hear it from like an expert's perspective, someone who's like, this is their job.
So how does free speech look in theory versus how it plays out at Northwestern? For FIRE, the answer lies in consistency. It is a willingness to defend speech you disagree with just as fiercely as the speech you do.
Not about what speech is allowed, it's about what speech isn't allowed. And you have to provide a good reason for that. The default is not, what am I allowed to say?
That message resonated even with students who acknowledge that practicing it can be difficult. In a polarized climate, defending the right to speak can sometimes feel like endorsing the message itself. But for FIRE, that's where the First Amendment does its most complex and most important work. Whether students walked away in agreement or not, on this day, the event started conversations that may shape how free speech shows up at Northwestern. From WNUR News, I'm Rosemary Mbao.
Northwestern students got a dose of comedy and career inspiration at the Spring Speaker event this past week as Saturday Night Live cast member Devin Walker visited campus. WNUR's Darasimi Bankali has more on the laughs, the lesson, and why the event was, no joke, a big deal.
Every quarter, Northwestern's A&O brings a speaker to the NU community. This spring, comedian and actor Devin Walker, best known for his role on Saturday Night Live, took the stage at Lutkin Hall, bringing laughs and insight from his comedy career.
His set was just really funny, and it was exactly what it was supposed to be.
That's Beenan and Weinberg student Clara Rolstad, an A&O street team member.
As someone who is very curious about exploring a creative path for my career, even though I'm not sure what to do yet, when I see these people who have thrown themselves so fully into their work, I think it's very inspiring to see that it can work out, since that industry can be very competitive, very cutthroat, and just difficult to be successful in. It's really cool to see people who understand all of the pressure.
Medill freshman Annika Sani feels the same way. She explains why it's impactful to see professionals in creative fields connecting with students on campus.
I think A&O does a really good job in bringing in professionals in the creative industry, and it makes me feel like there's a path towards success, and it adds more value to what can you bring as a creative and somebody in entertainment. We have really awesome developed programs in RTVF and drama, and so it's really inspiring to see these professionals like reach out to our student community.
For Weinberg freshman Obanaya Okizi, seeing someone like Walker close up made success in entertainment seem like less of a dream and more of a real possibility.
I feel like it makes the like goal feel a lot more attainable, like seeing like a normal like person was able to like make it to that level.
Devin Walker's visit didn't just give students laughs, but also a glimpse into what's possible in the world of entertainment. For WNUR News, I'm Darasimi Bankole.
The highly anticipated Todoroki sushi eating contest just took place. Here's Krishna Kumar with the details on the many twists and turns of the intense evening.
Last Sunday, April 13th, local sushi joint Todoroki hosted their annual sushi eating contest, in which competitors ate as many of the 50 California rolls given to them in the allotted 12 minutes as they could. Dozens of students turned out for the chance to win free all-you-can-eat sushi once a week for the next 8 weeks, a highly alluring prospect. Jack Tully, a junior in Weinberg studying economics, expressed his enthusiasm.
Well, my friend told me about it about 10 minutes ago, and I rushed over here, ran two red lights to be here.
And shared his intended strategy.
I will just grab as many as I can in my hand and stuff my face.
Even before the consumption competition began, though, a different sort of contest took place. The staggeringly high interest in the event warranted a lottery draw to select participants in the men's and women's face-offs. Additionally, one spot in each round was reserved for a fan favorite who received the most votes from other prospective contestants.
I was so excited. Literally, adrenaline was up. I started feeling nauseous. I was like, oh my God, all these people like want me to do this. And, you know, but I was really excited.
That was Dune Zawadzki, Weinberg Jr., and one of the official fan favorites of last week's competition. Along with her five competitors, she entered the first round with high hopes, but some ambiguity in the rules and imperfect planning led to considerable challenges.
They would take sips of water in between every one or two pieces, just to like help lubricate on the way down. And my problem was I finished my water 20 pieces in and I still had 30 to go. And I asked, can I have a water refill? They went, no refills. Now I'm a little bit, now I'm gagged. No, like literally and emotionally gagged because I'm out of water. I'm way slow down.
This was noticeable to the audience, many of whom had to adjust their strategies after seeing the impact of the one cup rule. Grant Putnam, a sophomore studying chemical engineering, shared his thoughts while watching the competition.
They're definitely, they got their spirit, they're coming in and they want to win. Some of them, half of them are taking it a little leisurely, but it gets me ready. I'm getting fired up to
that
go.
Makes sense.
I want to eat and win.
Technique ideas in mind? Any like pacing strategies?
Try not to use too much of my water early and save it more for the end when I need it most.
Circling back to the round itself, which ended up coming down to the wire in an intense showdown, Dune reflected on the experience.
I had to introspect, and I had to think, is it more embarrassing to lose the Todoroki speed eating contest, or is it more embarrassing to vomit at the Todoroki speed eating contest? And I decided, I said, I'm gonna pace myself. And it took me a while to like gather my bearings again and get back to it. But I think it's really a metaphor about, in a way, endurance. It felt like a sprint because it's speed eating, but it's very much a marathon. And you hit a wall, you can't give up. You have to keep going.
Unfortunately, due to another rule left unclarified that declared the victor based solely on pieces of sushi left on the plate at the end of time, rather than requiring the food to be finished, Dune's competitive eating journey was foiled.
And so at the end, I had 5 pieces left and she had 4 pieces left.
Wow.
And I was kicking myself because I was like, I could have shoved 4 pieces in my mouth. Like, I very much had the like chipmunk cheek ability to put a bunch in my mouth.
That concluded the women's competition and transitioned to the men's, where two familiar names got the chance to put their strategies into action. Grant, Jack, and another contestant ended up tying for first place in the initial round, requiring a runoff to determine the ultimate victor.
Honestly, I feel like we all could have won the runoff. It's just whoever opened their mouth first, because
really
we had the same level of full. It's just, do you think they're going to count the amount of food in your mouth is finished or not?
That makes sense. It was more of a mental game then.
Yes, it was all a mental game.
It may have been close, as Grant attested, but there was only one winner at the end of it all.
So you're just crowned champion, winner. How do you feel?
I feel great.
It's still great.
I feel very full though.
And Jack's plans for celebrating his success?
Are you back for dinner?
No, I'm not coming back for dinner. I think I'm good for the day.
For WNUR News, I'm Krishna Kumar.
Your favorite weekly pop culture segment is back. Jessica Watts has all the tea from this weekend's celebrity drama.
Welcome to the B-List, your weekly roundup of celebrity mess in pop culture. This week, Coachella Weekend 2, Sinners, and the NBA playoffs begin. Dancing with the Stars Live ended with a bang, as Emma Slater and Alan Bernstein ended their final performance with a kiss. Fans have been speculating that the pair were romantically involved since they began dancing together. Now, it seems viewers can finally put the rumors to rest as the pair has seemingly confirmed their relationship. Coachella's second weekend included surprise guests, microphone malfunctions, and more celebrity drama. Cynthia Erivo, Natasha Bedingfield, and Dave Grohl joined Gustavo Dudamel and the LA Phil for a special performance, serenading the crowd with a Foo Fighters medley and Prince's Purple Rain. Ed Sheeran also got added to the Coachella lineup, although fans were not too happy about his placement. Sheeran played the 3 p.m. slot on Saturday, a typical low point in the day, and was on a small stage. Tyla took advantage of her large crowd by teasing a new unreleased song called Bliss. The South African singer has been named one of the top artists to see at this year's festival. In other music news, Kendrick Lamar and SZA opened their Grand National Tour in Minneapolis Saturday night. The set list includes 52 songs, including hits like Luther, Not Like Us, and Snooze. The show is divided into 7 acts as Lamar and SZA go back and forth doing their own solo music and their collaborations. The duo will visit Chicago at Soldier Field on June 6th. Ryan Coogler's new horror film, Sinners, debuted in theaters this weekend, earning $46 million at the box office. The story takes place in the 1930s Mississippi Delta and features a predominantly black cast. The movie stars Michael B. Jordan and Hailee Steinfeld and is currently rated 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Finally, the NBA playoffs began this weekend with many surprising moments. The Oklahoma City Thunder defeated the Memphis Grizzlies in the largest Game 1 win in NBA playoff history. The Minnesota Timberwolves upset the Los Angeles Lakers with a final score of 117-95. Games continue tonight when the Denver Nuggets face off against the Los Angeles Clippers in Game 2 of the series. That's all for the B-List this week. Check in next Monday to hear about what happens this week in pop culture. For WNUR News, I'm Jessica Watts.
Now, for a brief look at the forecast. Unfortunately, some more gloomy weather is ahead. Tomorrow, the high is going to be 61, but it'll feel more like 59. The low will be 44 degrees, but it'll feel closer to 40. It's going to be cloudy for most of the day, starting the afternoon. And as long as you're home before 8:30, you won't need an umbrella. But if you're staying out late tomorrow, pack a raincoat. Wednesday is more of the same. It will be cloudy and it's going to be in the upper 50s range. There's a low chance of precipitation in the evening starting around 9 p.m., but it's going to be windy and feel colder than it actually is throughout the day, so be sure to layer up. Thursday is yet another day of cloudy, chilly, and windy weather. The high is 61 and we'll reach that around 2 p.m., where we will also likely finally see some sun. There's a 10% chance of rain scattered throughout the day, so keep that in mind. Hopefully, all this gloomy weather will lead us into a sunny summer. Now, let's take a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicago, and across the globe. Kat Vilma has withdrawn her consideration for an appointment on Evanston's Land Use Commission. Mayor Daniel Biss, who recently won his re-election, has selected her vacancy. In an email to Evanston Roundtable on Sunday, she said she was, quote, grateful for the opportunity to serve our city, end quote. Vilma is an affordable housing advocate and plans to continue to champion the cause. In Chicago, a street takeover occurred early Sunday morning in the Lakeview neighborhood. Dozens of people gathered as fireworks went off and cars did donuts, leaving skin marks behind. This is following the multiple teen takeovers across the city that have turned violent and resulted in gunshot injuries. Residents have called on the Chicago Police Department and Mayor Brandon Johnson to take action. And our biggest news of the day, Pope Francis died early this morning at the age of 88. The Vatican said the cause of death was a stroke that put him into a coma, which ultimately led to heart failure. His health has been top of mind as earlier this year, he was hospitalized for over a month with double pneumonia. According to the Vatican, his health had been improving. Yesterday on Easter Sunday, Pope Francis made a public appearance in St. Peter's Square in Rome. He was the first Jesuit pontiff and the first from the global south. He championed immigrants, environmental protection, while addressing the sexual abuse crisis that faced the church. He led the church into a more progressive world. In the coming days, the most senior members of the Catholic Church will travel to the Vatican and will begin the papal conclave. A highly secretive voting system where one cardinal must receive 2/3 of the vote. Cardinals over the age of 80 are not eligible. In the end, the church will have a new representative for God on earth. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news, updates, and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 89893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today was Karishna Kumar, and our reporters are Rosemary Mumbao, Darcy Meet Bankali, and Karishna Kumar. I'm Naya Reyes. Catch our next newscast this Wednesday on April 23rd. Now, back to scheduled program.